You're listening to E-Commerce Fastlane, episode 16.
Welcome to E-Commerce Fastlane, the podcast show to help you build, launch, grow, and scale a wildly successful e-commerce company. Listen to real conversations with proven practical strategies and success stories. Learn how to generate more traffic, more sales, more profit, and customer lifetime value for your Shopify store. And now, your host and e-commerce entrepreneur, Steve Hutt.
Hey there, it's Steve Hutt, and welcome back to the E-Commerce Fastlane podcast. If this is your first time listening, this is an e-commerce show where we have honest and transparent conversations about building and thriving online with your store powered by Shopify or Shopify Plus. Now, new episodes are available each week in iTunes and Stitcher and SoundCloud and Google Play and Spotify and yeah, you name it, we're out there. Or you can sign up online at ecommercefastlane.com and you can be notified when new shows are being released. Now, on today's episode, I'm chatting with Nathan Resnick, who's the CEO of a platform called Sourceify. And he's going to talk about the... really the incredible opportunity for Shopify brands really to source factories overseas to help manufacture some of your prototypes or your private label products, you know, and some of the pitfalls that that can happen and have happened along the way with many people kind of in that vetting process, and then the eventual birth of this Sourceify platform. It's very educational. It's an awesome episode. So I hope you get some great takeaways. Hi, Nathan, and welcome to the show.
Hey, Steve, what's up? Thanks so much for having me. Super excited to be here.
Thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. Where are we recording from today?
I'm in San Diego, you know, got back from our Guangzhou, China office Monday, and, you know, super excited to be back on the West Coast. You know, it's always fun going back and forth, and, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be able to be in China, you know, almost once a month nowadays.
So I think we better start off right at the beginning then and talk about kind of your entrepreneurial journey so far, kind of leading up to the launch of this kind of Sourceify platform.
Definitely. Yes. Yeah, super excited to dive in. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny for me as I look back on my entrepreneurial journey, it's really been a continuous amount of steps, just, you know, up in the right, up into the right. And so really my background actually stems in China. So I started studying Mandarin my freshman year of high school. And really, I think the reason why I started studying Mandarin was because I wanted to do something different than my older sister. You know, she was studying Spanish and I said, hey, you know, I've got to be different. So started studying Mandarin Chinese. And, you know, like any language, I think if you really want to take it to the next level, you've got to live in a country that speaks that language. And so my junior year of high school ended up taking up the opportunity to live with a host family that didn't speak English in China and attend a local Chinese high school. So I was one of 48 foreign exchange students to fully immerse during my junior year of high school in China. And it was incredible. I mean, not only being able to, you know, go to a local school and build a great network of friends and community across China, but really, you know, for me, what even excited me at that early stage was how these products were produced. You know, I became excited by Chinese economy and, you know, really the power of the factories over there. You know, I remember in high school, we used to go to these markets in Beijing. You know, people that have been there have probably heard of the Silk Market or Pearl Market. And back then, about, you know, 10 years ago, you used to be able to go there and they'd have, like, you know, knockoff Beats by Dr. Dre headphones or all these, you know, knockoff products. But I mean, man, I swear we tested the quality, and a lot of times these products could have been run off from factories. And by that, I mean a factory that's actually producing for these brands might have overproduced and resold them on these secondary markets. So, you know, to completely be transparent here, my first and hottest selling product in high school was those Beats by Dr. Dre headphones. So we'd go to these markets, buy them for, you know, $30-$40, and then resell them on eBay and Amazon for $200-$300. And it was a pretty good business. And we were making a few thousand dollars a month in high school, and soon realized, you know, as I got to college that, hey, you know, if I really want to grow an e-commerce company, I've got to go out and create my own brand and create my own product. And so with my experience in China, this then transitioned to me inventing the first leather watch strap without holes. It worked like a zip tie, like those belt buckles. And we actually grew that to a six-figure Shopify store in the first year. And it was an incredible experience, you know, being able to grow a brand and really create something new where you can actually, you know, scale up through, you know, brand retention. And the gross margins going, you know, D2C are amazing. And so from there, you know, realized that I was always more excited by the supply chain side of the business. And as that grew, other people and companies began to ask me, you know, Nathan, how do you produce products effectively overseas? And so realized that there was this huge gap in the market where 90% of companies out there, whether they be big or small, are managing production over email and Excel. I mean, literally a company supply chain a lot of times is like the Stone Age. And so ended up starting Sourceify about a year and a half ago, and we've become the fastest growing B2B manufacturing platform that helps hundreds of different companies produce products all across Asia.
Wow, it's pretty impressive. It's a nice run, and it sounds like when you say you're going up to the right, I can tell by your energy level that that's exactly what's happening. And I guess that's reasons why you're on the podcast today here, because you know we have a lot to get into. We talk about supply chain because I think that's one of the big, scary topics that a lot of people have when you're saying that using Excel and you're going through email and trying to pick the right partner and factory, and then there's language barriers and there's time zone issues, and there's a lot of things going on. So can you share with us maybe what makes a strong kind of supply chain like for an e-commerce company as far as you can see it today?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. And I think really the starting point there, you know, I think the audience listening in is going to be a diverse group of some people that are, you know, maybe already scaled up a company and looking to extend their product line, or entrepreneurs that are just getting started. And I would bet that most companies out there right now, you know, they're probably using open marketplaces like Alibaba or Global Sources to find a factory. And really the problem there is that, you know, you don't know who's who. And about 70% of those companies on these marketplaces are trading companies and wholesalers. And, you know, at the end of the day, you as a company really want to be producing directly with a factory. And a lot of times that's very hard to sort out. And so to, you know, number one, have a very strong supply chain, you want to go direct to factory. And really at the end of the day, I this is your process. If you go to find a factory on these open marketplaces, you know, you search for, you know, a keyword of a factory that you think is going to be producing your product. Let's say you're trying to produce watches, you search watches, there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of results there on Alibaba, and you're sending a message maybe to 30 or so companies, and judging the response time, you know, trying to do some Google search and really figure out who they are. And, you know, at the end of the day, you'll see the response times, maybe cut it down to 10 or five different factories that might be a fit, and then try to see what the sample costs are and what your unit costs are going to be. And so it takes, you know, a lot of times, even just a few weeks to figure out what factory you want to work with. And really, that's the first step. And I think what a lot of companies don't understand when they're just starting out, or even as they're scaling up, is how to really determine a factory right off the bat. Because I'll tell you, I mean, even earlier this week, I was at Sourcing Direct at ASD Market Week in Las Vegas. And really, it was this crazy balance where you go into these booths at these trade shows, and you have factories there that, you know, have products that are across categories. And when I go into a booth, or when I'm on a, you know, factory website, if you see that a factory can produce products that stem from a different raw material, you know, chances are they're either just a trading company, or they're only going to focus in on that one product category. You know, every factory needs to focus in on a certain raw material. And a lot of times that's going to be your deciding factor to figuring out, you know, what this factory usually produces. So I think that's really the first step to understanding, you know, what makes a strong supply chain is really figuring out, okay, am I working with a factory? Am I working with a wholesaler? And, you know, there are benefits to having agents. You know, through Sourceify, you actually work directly with factories just through our software. So it's completely transparent and visible what's going on. And we pre-vet, you know, all the factories we work with.
I see. Now, you did mention that, you know, obviously there's a few flaws and stuff, I think, with the whole supply chain, you know, as it kind of sits outside of your platform. And you, one thing you mentioned was just this communication through email and Excel. And, you know, and that's kind of so antiquated now. And so can you, you know, are there any other flaws that you kind of see in the current supply chain kind of as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. So here's the thing, like, let's say you've scaled up. Let's say you've scaled up and you're doing, you know, six figures a year through Shopify, which is amazing. I mean, that's a huge accomplishment. You know, out of the 600,000 or so Shopify stores, very few have even gotten to that, you know, six figure number. And so, you know, as you really realize that accomplishment, you now want to optimize your supply chain. You want to say, okay, how can I increase my margin on the back end? Because what we see, you know, especially here at Sourcefy, a lot of companies spend more time actually focusing on the digital marketing end. They say, hey, how can I lower my, you know, CPA, my cost per acquisition? Where if you can actually lower your unit costs and increase your margin, you're going to be able to spend more to acquire a customer. And at the end of the day, in the e-commerce world, you know, I'll tell you what, Steve, the company that can spend the most to acquire a customer and be profitable is going to be the one that wins. And so for you, it's not just about optimizing your ad spend. It's also about optimizing your unit costs and logistics and really your whole supply chain. And so as you scale, the best way to do this is really diving in to the components that actually make up your product. And, you know, I'll use this example of watches because so many little pieces that go into a watch. And by that, I mean, I'm talking about the watch hands, the watch case, the watch strap, the watch movement. All of these little pieces make up your watch. And so from a supply chain perspective, the companies or the factories that you're typically working with are assembly factories. And this is true of, you know, all sorts of apparel. It's true of a lot of, you know, even injection molds where they have raw material costs. And so for you, let's kind of go back to this watch example here. You're working with that watch assembly factory. And as you grow to a point where you're spending six figures a year on production, you're going to want to analyze each component cost. You know, how much does it actually cost to produce these watch hands? How much does it cost to produce this watch strap? And you can try to dive deeper into your supply chain. And by that, I mean, you actually figure out the sources for these little pieces that make up your whole product. And it's a very, you know, tight balance to really figure out those costs. But at the end of the day, that's how you're going to really push your margins higher is by understanding, okay, what are the actual costs breaking down from raw material to these pieces to even labor costs that go into making up this unit cost.
And so what's your take on the whole kind of shipping and freight forwarding kind of, is that more of a commodity this day and age now, or is there kind of margin savings that can happen in that area?
You know, I'm really glad you brought this up because this just happened last quarter where, you know, I think there are some great freight forwarding companies out there right now. You know, comes to mind that we partner with are, you know, Flexport and Freightos. I think they're both doing a great job by bringing modern software to the freight. And that's more specific around freight forwarding. What I really want to touch on where I see room for improvement margin wise is in the 3PL world, you know, the third party logistics world. And I'll give an example here. You know, we were working with the enterprise company here at Sourcefy that was, you know, shipping dozens of containers every month. And they had, you know, two very high volume SKUs. And they said, look, we want to really analyze our 3PL costs on these two high volume SKUs. I mean, they're literally, you know, selling about 1,000 units each of these SKUs every day. And so we went around, you know, we shopped around these 3PLs for them and said, look, these are the two SKUs. These are the specs that you need to quote. You know, these are the volumes that we're looking to ship at. And we sent out, you know, basically a request for a quote to about a dozen 3PLs. And you know what? In a week, we got back a dozen different prices and in a dozen different formats. You know, it took us, our team, a few hours just to analyze the cost behind what it would take to ship out these products from a 3PL. And so I think, you know, especially when it comes to the, you know, kind of end consumer logistics space, there's a lot of room for improvement because, you know, why does it cost one 3PL this price and another 3PL another price to ship the same product, you know, to the same destination? At the end of the day, I think, like you're saying, shipping, at least when it comes to domestic shipping, is a bit of a commodity now. And so at the end of the day, I think there's a lot of room for innovation in the 3PL world. But when it comes to freight forwarding, you know, that can be tricky. And there are, you know, a bunch of local Chinese partners that you can work with to really cut your costs on freight forwarding. But if you want full transparency and really a smooth experience, there's, you know, companies out there like Flexport and Freightos that really do a great job of bringing modern software to freight.
Cool. I'll make sure I put those links in the show notes too for those freight forwarders, for those that are interested. So another question I had for you is about kind of the future of e-commerce, because it, you know, it seems that, yeah, people that have come up with a great idea and they've, you know, considered a prototype, and then if they use your platform and they help source a factory and they get some samples and get things going, like that seems to be a great way to go down than maybe this kind of drop ship kind of idea, which will likely, I know we talked offline about that, but it's very interesting to me that that the market, I think the future really is in private label and coming up with your own concept versus maybe just selling other people's stuff. You know, I find a lot of affiliates, and I find a lot of people that maybe don't have an original product out there or a range of products and not building a brand per se. They're more reselling other people's things. If the people that are listening today, if they're like, no, you know what, I'm going to break that out of that mold, and I'm going to come up with a concept of my own, or I'm going to find something somewhere, or I'm going to make an enhanced version of that. Am I going down the right journey here about where the future of kind of commerce is headed?
Yeah, I mean, this is a great question, and I'll kind of try to break it up into two. Number one is more towards the future of e-commerce, and number two is towards dropshipping. And I'll start with dropshipping because, you know, I don't want to, you know, hate on dropshipping at all. I think it's a very good way to get started in e-commerce. And really the reason being is you don't have to put money into inventory. The problem is, number one, the customer experience, to be frank, it usually sucks. You know, if you're dropshipping products out of China or wherever, the shipping times to get from when a customer purchases a product on your, you know, Shopify store to when it arrives at their door is too long. And really, a lot of times there's so many defects in those products that it creates very little sustainability in terms of, you see a lot of people in the dropshipping world kind of having these churn and burn type of businesses. And at the end of the day, that's not sustainable. I mean, I'll tell you, every, you know, 10 plus million e-commerce company that I know is private labeling or creating their own products. And they're really investing in their brand. And that really increases the lifetime value of your customers, because a lot of these drop shipping stores, you know, it's one and done. And by that, I mean, you know, you sell one product to a customer and you aren't going to see them again. And so really the more sustainable approach is to go out and create your own private label brand and really invest in that brand engagement. And so from a drop shipping perspective, I think it is a great way to get started in e-commerce. You know, there's a great Shopify plugin, Oberlo, that makes it very easy to get started. But, you know, at the end of the day, once you've scaled to a certain point, you want to invest in your own brand. And that's really the focus of Sourcify. And so what I say is, you know, if you're just starting out, go on, get a you know, drop shipping store set up through Oberlo right now, scale up to a certain point, and then you can start private labeling your products through Sourcify and, you know, handle freight through Flexport or Freightos and continue to grow through Shopify. And hopefully you become, you know, then a Shopify Plus user and really start scaling up. But, you know, when you're just starting out, that's really the beauty of dropshipping, is you don't have to put money into inventory. And then when it comes to the future of e-commerce, you know, something that always comes to mind that I think is really fascinating right now is you see, you know, larger brands now that are trying to translate this online e-commerce dynamic and bring it offline. You know, you see Gymshark having pop-up stores around the world. And then you see even, you know, Away Suitcases, I think, just opened up a flagship store in San Francisco. And so it's very interesting to me to see how the future of e-commerce is kind of being translated from online to offline. And maybe that's because these brands want to have other verticals or more in-person engagement. But you know, I think it's kind of neat to just see this transition. And, you know, I'm not saying that you as a company should start focusing offline, but I'm saying if you get to the point where you're, you know, doing over $100 million in revenue, you know, you might want to start approaching other verticals. But for most e-commerce entrepreneurs, I think it's a dynamic where they have to be creative. And really one of the best use cases I've seen is with Original Grain watches. I mean, these are some of my favorite watches. Actually, you know, I used to live with the founders in China, and what they've done now is created partnerships, you know, licensing partnerships, MLB teams like the Red Sox and New York Yankees, and they create these very unique watches out of, you know, old stadium benches or chairs. I mean, it's pretty incredible, and they're able to charge such a premium for these watches because not only are they high quality, but also because they have that brand partnership in place with these sports teams. And so I think from the future of e-commerce type of perspective, I think it's going to be a matter of continuing to make strong partnerships in other verticals. Because, you know, once you get to a certain point where your brand is known for a certain product, like Pura Vida bracelets, you know, they started with bracelets and now they sell all sorts of products. You're going to have to roll out other SKUs. And, you know, from an operation perspective, that's going to be a challenge. So you either have to, you know, continue to innovate with that main SKU that you have, or roll out SKUs and really try to figure out what your audience also likes. So, you know, that's what I kind of comes to mind when I think about the future of e-commerce.
You know, it's funny you mention that too, because when I think of, like, for example, Movement Watches is one example where, you know, they have a great watch. They blew up. They're huge on Instagram. And, you know, they decided to branch out into eyewear. And that also blew up for them too, because, you know, it was perfect for their target audience. If they already sold you a watch, it was very simple to say, you know, to start marketing them to their eyewear brand. And so that's been quite helpful. And I totally agree with you about the other brands and kind of having how they've allowed themselves to expand out into other areas. One thing I will also agree with you on too, I made a note here, was that retail pop-up shops and kind of what, you know, what Gymshark is doing with kind of in real life experiences and stuff. It's very interesting to me. And that's what Shopify, I really feel, is doubling down on. The fact that, you know, I've just heard as of late that now the bricks and mortar kind of a retail package for the POS system is now included for most of the Shopify instances now, instead of having to pay an extra $50 to have access to a POS device and be able to sell in real life at, you know, at different events and pop-ups and different things. So I can see, and I also read somewhere recently too, that I think it's 8 out of 10 transactions are still done in person, in retail. So we always talk about this, you know, e-commerce and just how massive it is. And you're right, it is massive and it's continuing to grow. There's no doubt. But, you know, if 8 out of 10 transactions are still done in a physical store or through a pop-up, there still is that opportunity out there that, you know, who's ever listening today, if you're, hey, you know, you might be struggling or you're at a certain level right now, have you ever thought of getting involved with a pop-up shop? There's a great way of connecting with your Shopify store, with a POS system, and with ways through social media to kind of and through Launchpad, you can launch a different theme and have a limited quantity available at a certain price. And there's some really fun things that are really out there. So I'm really glad that you brought up those points.
Yeah, and you know, you can do pop-ups in a fun way. You know, I remember here in San Diego the other month, Original Grain, they have this really cool trailer that they created. It's you know, got all these wooden pieces and parts in it to reflect their brand. And they, you know, co-sponsored like a brewery festival here in San Diego. And it was a really cool type of way to integrate their brand with a festival. You know, it was really neat. The engagement there I saw was really strong for them. And I think at the end of the day, you know, it's always cool to chat about your brand in person with potential customers, because, you know, you get to get, you know, product feedback right there and then and get, you know, some sales in the door. Or if not, you know, hopefully you can track that offline, either through like a coupon code or just see if there's a spike after the event.
Yeah, I'll make sure I put, I'm just thinking about it now, is Gymshark with Shopify produced a really good documentary I know it's on Shopify.com, but I'll put it in the show notes. It's an amazing video that we created. It's just talking about the hype of kind of what happened with this kind of, you know, literally a pure play e-commerce company, and just the raving fans, and then having a real life pop-up. It was phenomenal, the amount of people that showed up. And it's really inspiring about kind of, you know, where the future is headed, that people still like to be with other people and be in real life. And it doesn't have to always be purchased online. And so interesting how Original Grain did that too with their, it's just so many creative ways of engaging your audience, however that be, in real life or online.
Yeah. And I would say too, you know, if you're going to kind of try to translate the online with what you do at Shopify to an offline event, you know, make it unique, make it creative, and you know, really try to make sure it fits your brand. I think that's a key right there. You know, you can't just go start selling your products on the street. You want to either, you know, take part in maybe a bigger show or festival, or, you know, find a way to create an innovative type of pop-up space.
So you've been quite successful, obviously, in the past, starting in college and kind of doing your thing with the watch strap, and then you know what success looks like now that you've built this platform. You get access to and communicate with the factories and merchants. And so, what kind of opportunities do you see for growth today for an e-commerce brand?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think really when it comes to growth for an e-commerce brand, it depends what stage you're at. I would say, if you're kind of in that startup-ish type of stage, you're going to want to do more, cross collaborations with brands via giveaways on social media. I mean, I think that's still a pretty hot way to gain engagement. And I think also, in today's world, we give so much credit to these, big influencers, Kylie Cosmetics, Kylie Jenner just had a really cool article come out about her on Forbes, about her becoming, potentially the youngest female billionaire, which is incredible. But, at the end of the day, if you look at how that brand has grown, a lot of it's been through her influence, which is, out of this world. And so I think at the end of the day, for a brand that's growing, it might not make sense to work with that big of an influencer per se, but what will make sense is potentially working with, more micro or mid-sized influencers that you can, still have a lot of engagement with. Because if you look at the numbers when it comes to engagement with influencers, as they have bigger followers, the engagement rate typically doesn't scale up with the amount of followers. It's on a sliding scale that actually decreases. So let's say you have, 1,000 to 10,000 followers. A lot of time the engagement rate on Instagram is 8%. But once you get to over 100,000 or 500,000 followers, I think it drops to around 2 or 5%. And so it's this interesting dynamic where I think a lot of brands get very excited to work with very influential, kind of celebrity-oriented people, which is awesome. If you can ink one of those influencer deals, that's great. But at the end of the day, I think there's still a lot of room for growth when it comes to these micro influencers. And it's not something to overlook. If you can create a very strong relationship with hundreds of thousands of ambassadors around the world, I guarantee you, you're going to have success with your brand.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the micro-influencer. I recently interviewed a couple founders of a couple platforms that I've been recommending to a lot of my merchants. And one is Gatsby.ai. Another one's called Woolly.com. And it's so interesting where they have a different flip on it, where they are choosing to look at their customers and then filter the social footprint of their customers or potential customers. And then from there, choose how to outreach to them. So if someone was to buy something, and then inside the, let's say, example, the Woolly platform, inside there, you'll be able to set up certain filters and alerts and potential email outreach to say, hey, we're right in the middle of a Instagram campaign right now. And, they've just made a purchase from me today. And so, and they're in my sweet spot of more than 5,000 followers, and they bought my product. That's very interesting. I don't have to sell them on the concept or pay the money directly to promote my products. So that's what kind of Woolly does. And then on the other side, the Gatsby.ai side, they're, instead of me giving a 10% off in exchange for an email address and kind of going down that typical kind of exit intent kind of way of doing business that a lot of brands are doing, they have a unique way of just kind of, follow us on social media to get your discount or to get some kind of promotion. And then from there, then the outreach starts at that point. So it's quite interesting. So I'm glad you brought the micro-influencer. It's a massively hot topic that's been discussed everywhere that, that I travel with my merchants and stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
Anything else that's kind of top of mind for growth?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that's been top of mind, here at Sourcify that a lot of our users are bringing up is the China tariffs. And, you've seen a lot of hype in the news about this recently. And, at the end of the day, right now, it's not really directly affecting a lot of e-commerce entrepreneurs. It's more in industrial or aerospace or agriculture type of products, and the HTS codes that are being affected. But, at the end of the day, it's something to keep in mind. And there are talks about these new tariffs coming up that could potentially directly affect a lot of e-commerce entrepreneurs. I know shoes, for example, about 70% of the world's shoes are produced in China right now, and they're thinking about putting tariffs on shoes. And so a lot of these shoe companies now are really scrambling to diversify their supply chain. But the problem is, you know, a lot of these great shoe facilities in Vietnam or India are already taken up by bigger brands. And so it's a bit of a scramble for these mid-sized companies to really find other sources. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think really when it comes to these tariffs right now, you know, that 25% increase that our American administration put on these imports, you know, it's kind of crazy because it hurts both us Americans as consumers and also these Chinese factories, because the cost, you know, the increased cost has to translate somewhere. And really what we're seeing here at Sourcify is that it's being kind of divided up where, you know, factories understand that these companies just can't pay 25% more to import their products. And so they're trying to, you know, lower their costs as well. And then these companies here in America are seeing, okay, well, can we, you know, charge more for the products that we are selling? And, you know, at the end of the day, from, you know, an overall economical standpoint, if these increased costs mean that, you know, American consumers aren't purchasing as much, it basically means that, you know, these companies aren't going to have as many customers, and could really, you know, hurt the global economy and send some companies out of business. So it's something to, you know, really keep an eye on. And I would always suggest to diversify your supply chain. You know, at scale, you never want to be single sourced. At Sourcify, we run production runs across India, the Philippines, Vietnam, Thailand, China, and Mexico. And, you know, we're always happy to help diversify a supply chain. Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, e-commerce, you know, besides branding and really creating your own product, comes down to the numbers. And every, you know, brand and company wants to be profitable. So if you can have, you know, your gross margin, which is basically your sale price minus your unit cost, be higher than your cost of acquisition, you're going to be profitable. And as you scale up, that's going to be challenging to do across channels. You know, you might not just be spending on Facebook or Instagram. You'll be spending on native ad platforms or across Google AdWords. And so you're going to really have to analyze, you know, what's the lifetime value of my customers? What's the repeat purchase rate? And analyze how that translates to an actual CPA to you know, scale up your business. Because at the end of the day, you know, I'll go back to the point I made earlier where I think the company that can spend the most profitably to acquire a customer is going to be the one that wins.
Beautiful. Thanks, Nathan. I really appreciate some awesome insights. We are nearing the end of the show. Do you have any kind of closing comments that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, e-commerce, you know, besides branding and really creating your own product, comes down to the numbers. And every, you know, brand and company wants to be profitable. So if you can have, you know, your gross margin, which is basically your sale price minus your unit cost, be higher than your cost of acquisition, you're going to be profitable. And as you scale up, that's going to be challenging to do across channels. You know, you might not just be spending on Facebook or Instagram, you'll be spending on native ad platforms or across Google AdWords. And so you're going to really have to analyze, you know, what's the lifetime value of my customers? What's the repeat purchase rate? And analyze how that translates to an actual CPA to you know, scale up your business. Because at the end of the day, you know, I'll go back to the point I made earlier where I think the company that can spend the most profitably to acquire a customer is going to be the one that wins.
That's awesome. So how can people learn more about the Sourcify platform? Where can they go?
Yeah, totally. They can just go to trysourcify.com and feel free to reach out to me personally. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, just Nathan Resnick, or Facebook, just Nathan Resnick as well. And, you know, really appreciate everyone tuning in. And, you know, thanks again, Steve, for having me on.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'll make sure I update the show notes. I've scrambled down a bunch of notes myself, so I'll make sure I transcribe a lot of these over into the show notes. And yeah, thanks again. I do really do appreciate, and you've got some great insights, and I hope everyone has some good takeaways. So have yourself a great day. I hope you enjoyed my conversation today with Nathan Resnick from Sourcify. You know, it's amazing how entrepreneurs think. You know, here he is learning Chinese and kind of getting involved with the culture, you know, and he sees an opportunity, you know, to build a platform to kind of pair up merchants with factories, you know, kind of in an effort to kind of scale and improve gross margins for Shopify store owners. You know, it really is quite impressive. You know, and I challenge you that, you know, if you have a desire to sell a private label brand or an improvement to an existing product, really, check out TrySourcify. It's T-R-Y, so TrySourcify.com, you know, as part of your kind of go-to-market initiatives. Well, thanks for being a supporter of this show and taking time out of your day and listening. I truly appreciate you and your entrepreneurial journey with commerce powered by Shopify. Until then, enjoy the rest of your week and take care.